Blog Talk Radio.
Corey.
I am fantastic.
That's awesome.
That is the instrumental from No Church in the Wild, which is, you've been watching TV the past few days. You've probably heard it in the Denzel Washington's new movie. I'm having a whole love affair thing with him this morning. I had Ginger laughing. I told her if I was married to him, every time you saw him on the red carpet, there would be a woman hanging onto his leg. And he'd be like, is that a crazed fan? No, that's just my wife. Well, she's talking to you? No, she just thinks I'm hot. There's chafing involved. She won't leave me alone. Yes. And I had to do the instrumental because the original song, of course, is Jay-Z and Kanye. And we already gave y'all an earful earlier in the week. I figured I'd cut you a break since some of you are still at work.
They don't need no stinking breaks.
Oh, in case you did not know where you were, this is Lunch with Ginger and Corey. And I... And Princess Peach.
Princess Peach. Well, then I am Miss Pac-Man.
You're supposed to be Princess Daisy.
Princess Daisy? Oh, my bad. I'm Princess Daisy then.
Get your umbrellas ready. And damn, this skirt is hot. Is yours hot? All these petticoats and... Okay, anyway.
Yeah, see, I'm never very good at being the girl thing, so the whole petticoats and the long dresses and whatnot, no. Just put me in at some shorts or some jeans and a pair of boots and a t-shirt and I'm good.
Apparently, Ginger, you were not as country as my family was because they would put us on those dresses and you'd reach between the legs and tie them.
This has gotten in the way. And running around here, you're going to go through bramble and that's just going to tear your legs up. And that'll hurt.
See, that's why you tie the dress up so that it would cover your legs. You tie it and then you could still run. It was like having on pants still, but fluffy.
I didn't think about that. I was thinking you tied up like between your legs, so it's like shorts or something.
Yeah, well, you don't tie it that short. You leave it enough so it cover your legs. And then it catches all the brambles, and of course, you get a spanking because people are like, you got brambles in this dress.
Yeah. And I was always better just throw me in some jeans and some boots and a t-shirt, and I was good to go.
Well, my mom found that out by the time I turned 6 to put me in jeans and t-shirt because I got caught on a fence in the backyard climbing over from the neighbor's yard, stealing peaches off the tree. That's why I'm Princess Peach. So, and my cousins left me there. I will not forget that, y'all.
No. Ours was, there was a field next door that had wild, it was an old abandoned house. Nobody lived there anymore. And there were wild blackberries.
Ooh, yes.
We'd get sent out there with the 5-gallon buckets.
Yes.
And we'd come back stuffed full. The buckets, of course, were full, too. But we were stuffed full of blackberries and, like, dyed purple from them. And, it was so good. So good.
Don't you guys go in the blackberry patch? There's snakes.
And we didn't care about no snakes. We just wanted the blackberries. We come back to make blackberry jelly and blackberry jam.
That was the goal. We were supposed to go down with an adult, and we go anyway, and we're told to stay out of it, and we come back and lie and say we hadn't eaten them. But as you said, purple hands.
Purple hands. Purple mouth. And if you're redneck like us, you know, once while we're walking around, because those 5-gallon buckets get heavy, we set those down, we pull our shirts out. And, you know, kind of make them into a bowl kind of thing. So, yeah, our shirts would be dyed purple.
That's a country thing. That's what we are.
That's my country roots.
That's right. See, y'all didn't know. You guys up north, y'all don't know about this stuff.
No.
May I go first? I have.
Yeah, I thought you said you. Yeah.
I've got an interesting one. Well, I'm not going to talk about Injumoco yet. I want to talk about this one because we're probably going to discuss this again tonight because we've kind of hinted on this before, but we never had a full-fledged discussion. GI.biz has a story this morning that basically says the inflated price. Come on, Corey, get it down. Inflated price. inflated console prices are what is fueling the free-to-play growth. True or not? You agree or disagree? Yeah. So they're saying the high price of home console games is fueling the growth of the free-to-play market as consumers...
I mean, just think about it. Some of the and the games alone for the consoles are flipping expensive.
Mm-hmm. So consumers are shunning fixed prices and sample games with no initial cost. Speaking at the 2012 DICE Summit in Las Vegas, which is going on now, 2012? Yeah. Gabriel Layden, who's the CEO of mobile company AdMired, and it's ADDMired, said that the console business has upheld a standard pricing structure for physical product for so long that it can no longer afford to take risks with the IP. So instead of churning out sequels to recoup the inflated costs, they're instead churning out sequels to recoup the inflated costs of game development. They said mobile is the home of free-to-play, and that's the next big model for video games. Said Layden, the real problem for consoles is price fixing. Consoles set expectations for prices for 30 years. Nobody talks about how bad it is to charge somebody $70 for something they don't like. Oh, believe you me, honey, we talk about it. You can't know what you're getting because it's another sequel with $100 million marketing. One day after Call of Duty is out, the used section of GameStop is filled with them. You have an army of consumers who paid $70 and lost $40 by trading it in. Free-to-play eliminates the risk for consumers, said Layden, while the console business is making it harder for consumers to find value in a market where online passes reduce the ability to trade a game, or future consoles may eliminate the ability to play used games at all. According to Layden, with a good free-to-play, the risk is passed to the developers, which is then forced to innovate to attract and keep consumers playing games. It removes the risk from the consumer, and the consumer pays nothing to try out the game. He says he wants the consumer to play for months without paying. Good free-to-play encourages players to stay, and that's where the longevity is because the risk of an online pass, consoles that can't play used games, DLC, and all this stuff after you've paid $70, why would I do that?
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, saying the risk of being transferred comes about the developer. The developer has all the risk now, so they end up doing crazy stuff because it's a new industry. The argument that console games offer something bigger or better than mobile games isn't valid, said Layden. I have to disagree with that, Layden, who pointed to the record industry sticking by vinyl as better for audio quality when CDs were first introduced, and CDs when MP3 technology came to market. Free-to-play is the MP3 of video game industry, and it will destroy all business models, and it removes the risk for the consumer. Oh, we're going to have to talk about this tonight.
I think the second story, did you see this one over Game Politics? I think this ties into this, but I could be wrong.
Well, in one moment. Okay. He also pointed out the success of a company like Gree, which makes a better profit from its 25 million users than Zynga does over the 200 million players they have on Facebook, as evidence that the U.S. is way behind Asian companies when it comes to creating successful free-to-play mobile and social games. Ooh, look, man. On some points, I wholeheartedly agree. On others, because with a developer, we'll probably repeat this tonight and get more in depth to it. Of course, we'll have Blast Trent Snow here to argue against. But the thing is, a lot of the mobile games aren't better than the console games, and that's where it becomes a toss up. As a consumer, you're like, I'll play the free game, and sometimes I'm just playing it not because it's good, but because it is free.
Yes, exactly.
But there's very few really good mobile games on the market. Very, very few. And I can count the companies on one hand. We say Rockstar is one. And, actually, I believe that's it.
Yeah.
I haven't run across any really good iPad mobile game. Oh, I take that back. There's the one that I've been harping about for the past few weeks, Battleheart.
Yeah.
Is a very good mobile game. It's on all of the mobile platforms. It's on iPad, iPhone, it's also on Android, and it's an RPG. And I think it might be an MMORPG, but very, very good game. But there's so few of them. Most of the free-to-play and mobile games are sucky crap. What's the one that you and Jay were playing? The something to do with Rome, or was it Rome?
I don't know what
you were talking about. Curb stomping somebody to death, you and him both.
Oh, good God, and on the back of my head now. Vindictus.
Yes. So, very few.
Yes, Vindictus is a good one. I just don't play it too much. There's not a very big community. It's a lot like Guild Wars in the way that it's not open world.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of makes it like a blech.
Yeah, I don't like an open world. I hate instanced things.
Yes. I want to be able to roam and explore, and I want to run across people and play with them.
But now, here, before we let Ginger take the floor here, I want to mention this comment from one Mr. David Herod, who's the Codemasters, the senior programmer over at Codemasters. And he says, oh, please, don't pretend the free-to-play exists for the benefit of the customer. Microtransactions are there to hide the true cost of the game from the consumer.
True story.
More money than they want to if they actually realize what they were spending. I concur, Dave. But we'll talk
about
it. But
that's the point. That's the point. People are more willing to be nickeled and dimed than to pay a full on-out, you know, $15 or $20.
Without having tried it.
Yes.
So that what that means is developers, we either need more demos, longer playing demos, or something. Something's got to give somewhere because this $70 a pop is killing us, really. It wasn't even a subtle, it wasn't a gradation when they went up in the price either. It went from 40 to 70, like in the space of a year.
Mm-hmm.
If you guys think back very carefully, back probably like 2007 maybe, is when it jumped from $40 to 70. And nobody's Oh, and good morning to you, Mr. Joseph Hill, and also Pro Elite Gamer. Good morning to you all.
Good morning.
What you got, Ginger?
All right, what have I got? Well, this one actually kind of ties in with that. You were just talking about the whole UMD thing, right? From GamePolitics.com this morning, I had to find it. I was still opening stuff. It looks like those UMDs you bought for your PlayStation Portable will be completely useless if you decide to upgrade to a PS Vita, unless you're in Japan. Sony announced what it called the UMD Passport Program for Japanese customers. The players in other regions will not have access to that program. Sony decided that we didn't want or need it. The UMD Passport Program would allow gamers to register the games they already had on the PSP exclusive format and then download them onto their spiffy new Vita devices. Sony has not come out and said why we're not going to get this here in the U.S. yet. I have a feeling going to get it, but so far, no UMD passport for U.S. or for Europe. So it looks like for us, we're just going to be screwed and going to have to pay for the games again.
That's just mean.
That is just mean. Horribly mean. Horrible, horrible, horrible mean. That's not nice. Not nice.
That's hurtful.
I just don't get why they would offer it for one and then not to the others, you know?
Well, is it China or Japan?
Japan.
Well, you know, the Japanese are like, screw you Americans.
Well, that's where Sony comes from originally, right?
Yes, that's their home.
So, I mean, that could have a lot of it, but still.
Well, that is exactly why I gripe at iPad about pulling, you know, our production back over here. Not that I'm anti-Japanese or Chinese or any of the Asian countries. I'm like, if your own house is crumbling, you fix your own roof first. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Apple. You're an American-based company. See how the Japanese take care of their own? And whatever Americans, you know, you can buy this, but you fend for yourself. Whatever. Okay.
Pretty much exactly what they said.
And I can't be mad at them.
We don't love you.
I cannot be angry with them about that. I can't. I'm not buying a Vita anyway. Or at least I don't think I am. Somebody's going to have to convince me because I was not down with the PSP at all.
Mm-mm.
Anything that breaks if I sneeze on it, I don't want. Okay.
I'm still upset over my Xperia Play. I love it. Don't get me wrong, but I feel like I.
Well, your Xperia Play takes. Can it take some abuse?
It takes abuse.
It takes abuse?
Yeah.
Because, see, my DS, and I'm going to have to take pictures of my original DS. I will show you guys that it's not scratched or dented, and I have dropped it many times, and I've had it since. I think three, four months after they launched.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing that's that looks tattered is the label on the bottom.
Oh, fair enough.
It's in damn good condition. Okay, those of you who have little pinky-licious, cutie little girl ears, connect to the speakers. Yes, I have to talk to
you. Why do they got to be pinky?
Because this is one of those games. You know not all little girls are pinky and cutie. That's why I said if you have pinky, cutie little girls, because some little girls, like the ones in my family, are skater chicks, that like ripped nylons and things like that, so they wouldn't like this. But you might have one that does. Game Mill Entertainment, and an independent developer of entertaining mass-market video games, has announced its magical, fun-filled, Silverlicious game for the Nintendo DS handheld system, and it will launch or be available in stores on March 20th. You can join the adventure and get a first look at the exploration game based on the Silverlicious story from best-selling Pinkalicious children's book series right on our site. GameAndAtrix.com. Just type in Silverlicious in the search box at the top. This game is following the enchanting storyline of Silverlicious, written and illustrated by one Miss Victoria Khan. Silverlicious, the game, lets players set out on an adventure as Pinkalicious, who has lost her ability to sing.
Pinkalicious, really?
Yes,
oh my gosh.
She turns pink on the website when she eats cupcake. I'm sorry, I had to go look at it. It had licious in
yes,
the title.
I heard you going crazy over it earlier. Oh my god, look, she's pink.
It's cute. It's one of those cutes where you can't look away cute. So you can help Pinkalicious regain her sweet tooth as you practice kindness and good manners and helping others in need, which is never bad lessons. You can probably let some little boys play this if they don't go, yuck, ooh, it's girly stuff. You can also unlock magical rewards, including butterflies, sparkle rides, and fireworks as you explore the beautiful lands and meet new friends. Along the way, you'll learn that true sweetness comes from much more than cupcakes and cookies. We've told you about this game before, and I was like, ugh, stop it. Whether playing alone or with others, Silverlicious, the game, creates an imaginative and fun way to drive home the importance of kindness and manners. Developed by First Playable, Silverlicious is for the Nintendo DS and is rated E for everyone by the ESRB. You can also check out Game Mill's line of products. I believe they do a lot of educational games, too, so you can check them out at game-mill.com. Also, a fact I meant to share at the top of the show, something Ginger and I learned before the show. Did you guys out there know that a woman invented 3D?
That is so flipping cool. That is so friggin' cool.
Mm-hmm. And
yes,
you did. And every time you buy the 3D TVs and you go to the 3D movies and you're like, this is so cool, this is a guy thing. Remember, a woman made that possible.
Yes.
It took a woman to envision it. I'm sorry, I had to just tout the whole. So proud to be a girl.
We should be. We got the magic box.
And the knobs to turn it on.
Yes, baby.
This is a daytime show. We're all kind of.
All right. Well, it looks like Microsoft trying to, I would say trying to, but anyways, they've already got their hands in the pot with the whole Star Wars thing. Looks like they're going to get a little bit further in. Xbox 360 Star Wars game and console finally has a release date. I am pulling this from the Yahoo Tech section. Looks like they pulled it from Digital Trends. Announced way back in July last year during Comic-Con, if you got any of that, Microsoft has finally given its limited edition Star Wars-themed Xbox 360 and Kinect Star Wars game a release date. Originally scheduled for last holiday season, it's now set for April 3rd in both the USA and UK.
I wonder why.
I know, right? All right, so the Xbox 360 bundle comes with a 320-gigabyte console with a custom R2-D2 paint job and special sound effects, a C-3PO-themed gold controller, and a bright Stormtrooper white Kinect accessory. Also included in the box is an Xbox Live wired headset and an Xbox Live token. A copy of Kinect Star Wars will also be bundled inside, and Microsoft has released a few more details regarding the game's content. There are going to be 5 gaming modes, 4 of which sound great, apparently. Jedi, Destiny, Darkseid, Rising, Ranker, Rampage, Pod Racing, and Duels of Fate. The 5th is called Galactic Dance-Off.
Okay.
All right.
I don't even know.
Yeah, apparently that's going to be set in Jabba's Palace. It's described in a press release as loaded with Star Wars-themed pop tunes, where those still honing their Jedi skills can take a break to battle Darth Vader on the dance floor or bust a move solo style.
Why?
I don't know. Oh, my God. All right. So, So, what did I say? April 3rd? April 3rd, we can all appreciate this atrocity. I mean, this incoming awesome game. Yes. Xbox, Microsoft, stop. You're going to the dark side. They don't have the feet. I promise. They don't.
That's not the dark side. That's just the wrong side.
That's the wrong side.
Wrong.
It's not
wrong,
the left
wrong.
Side. It's not the right side. It's the wrong side.
Ugh. All right. So those of you who like to keep your hands on the wheel, above the wheel when you're driving, will like this next app. In an effort to cut down on your driving distractions even further, the crowdsourced driving app Waze has today added the ability for fully functioning hands-free control to report traffic situations, bringing Siri-like functionality to the free app before Apple has released its own Siri app API. Waze man, the vitamins. Way's solution is actually more advanced than Siri in one key way. You don't have to awkwardly hold down any buttons to activate voice commands. Instead, Waze's voice controls are activated simply by waving your hands over the phone screen while driving. Waze uses the iPhone's proximity sensor to make its functionality. As you can see in the window below, it's a particularly nifty gesture. I'm sorry, I don't have the window below. That's in my little release they sent. Once activated, you can speak commands to Waze like report traffic, which will let you give an account of the traffic ahead, or you can change your route by telling the app to drive home. The company is utilizing the open source API OpenEars to power its voice controls, but it's open to moving to an official Siri API when Apple makes it available. Waze's free apps are available on the iPhone, on the Android, BlackBerry, Windows Mobile, Symbian phones. It offers free turn-by-turn directions as well. But Waze's true value is in its vast amount of live traffic data. Crowdsourced entirely from its users, the data makes Waze a far more useful alternative to standalone GPS units. I know I would like to have this, especially in Houston, around 4:30, around the Westheimer area. Boo. Waze VP community geographer Deanne Eisner has told VentureBeat that they've been working on the feature, which is one of the most requested base of, yes, 12 million users. Let me repeat that to you, 12 million users for months. The company, too, found the feature important as it will remove yet another major distraction from drivers while using its app. Waze has also disabled text input in the app while your car is in motion, which will discourage you from focusing too much on your phones. The updated Waze app does take advantage of Siri when it comes to more complex voice controls, like looking up a specific address or local business. Ooh, the vitamins are out of control. But it seems to just be Siri's dictation, be using Siri's dictation capabilities. The update also includes the ability to share your destination and ETA, and you can also tell your friends when you're going to be late. The voice control feature will first appear on the Waze iPhone app, mainly because it was the idea of Waze's core iPhone engineer, and it'll hit other platforms eventually. The Waze is based in Palo Alto, California, and they've raised about $55 million thus far, and I can see why. This is
$55 million.
Yeah, I would like to have this because I'm one of those people that you see driving. I hold the phone in my one hand over the steering wheel so that I can kind of follow if I need to without taking my eyes too far from the road. So this would be really great whenever it comes to Android to have, so I don't have to keep constantly looking at the phone.
Yeah.
And not that I'm swerving over into other lanes or anything. Some of you... You know, it seems like the better our technology gets, the worse we get at driving, ironically.
Yes. We saw. I was with somebody the other day in a car. Somebody was on their cell phone ahead of us, and it looks like they're sitting there texting, not paying attention to where they're driving, and almost clipped their back end underneath an 18-wheeler. Full of gas.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, my God.
I am not at all surprised. I've been passing by people that are driving slow and see them texting, and you say, well, you know, some people are texting while driving. You shouldn't. That's what I mean by the technology has gotten better. I know my lovely little phone has a text-to-speech app, which I use often in the car.
Yes.
I use it often when I'm driving if I feel like – which is stupid, actually. Just tell people to call you, you know, and get it out of the way. But I'm assuming the other person is somewhere where they can't talk, so then I'll text them. But I use that thing. It's a little button, and I can hold it up, you know, to my mouth and drive at the same time. But I tell you what really gets me is the people who can't talk on the phone and drive.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
How do you
that.
Not? Because, I mean, so many people talk to people in their car while they're driving.
Exactly. See, you,
but you can't talk to a device on your ear and
drive. Doesn't make sense.
Seriously, people.
I don't get it. Somebody else who finally gets it. Why can you not talk on the phone and drive? People are swerving. They're not paying attention because they're on the phone.
If you hold it up to your ear, there are devices where you can plug it into your stereo system and have them talk to you, and it'll still pick up your voice.
They don't even have to plug it in. It's Wi-Fi now. You can Wi-Fi to a radio.
Yeah.
There's no reason, people, for you to all to be killing yourselves over this, really.
No. Or, you know, just put the phone down, pull over to the side of the road, and then talk to them if it's that big of a deal for you. Because I promise you, if you sit on the side of the road for a couple of minutes, you're going to figure out, hey, you know what? I could have been at your house already. We could have been having this conversation in person. I don't get it. Or, you know, wherever you're going. I'll be at the store. I'll be at work. I'll be at home. We could have continued this conversation. No, no. Good people.
I just need my text to be read back to me. I probably have that feature. I haven't played with it yet, but I think I'm going to turn that on so I can have my stuff read to me. Then I will completely not be texting that way in the car.
Yeah.
All right.
12's weirdest horror game.
Wow.
Yeah. Days after a virus turns most of a small town into crazed killers, one man struggles to find a cure before it spreads to the outside world. I think we talked about this a couple of days ago, actually. It sounds familiar. But there's so many zombie games. All right, so End Night, this year's weirdest survival horror game, hits the App Store for iPad. End Night brings the hardcore survival experience to mobile with fast pickup and play controls, dynamic missions, and an emergent gameplay experience. The game's creator, Ben Falcon, says, "We wanted to make something that created the heart-pounding experience of survival horror games, but allowed people to experience it in smaller chunks on a mobile device. Working out of your safe home lab, you're concocting a vaccine for the virus. Outside, the night air is filled with groans of infected townsfolk, all drooling for a piece of you. If you set a toe outside, it'll only be a matter of seconds before they pounce, hacking away at you." Decide how you survive the night by deciding which resources you need and where you need to go find them. Dynamic missions that change depending on your choices. Ooh, I like that. Loot weapons, ammo, health packs, and more to stay alive and survive. Collect infected samples to discover a cure for the disease. Find bathtubs to wash infected blood off of you. End Night is more about resource management than fast twitch controls. Your decisions are where to go next and what you'll need to loot to ensure survival. One bad choice, like deciding to go to a heavily infested area without looting the gun store for ammo and armor first, will probably see you end up in an early grave. End of Night also humanizes the survival horror genre, putting you in the place of the last man in an infected town. Feel remorse after killing. Find booze and Bibles to wash away the pain. Keep your lab assistant happy, so he can keep working on finding the next door. Wash blood off your body to avoid getting infected, and doubt your actions as the infected leave you messages scrawled on walls pleading with you to stop killing them. Oh, this sounds kind of cool. All right, so it is optimized for the iPad too. So if you've got one, head over and check that out. They did not. Oh yeah, they did. They gave me a price. It's $2.99.
Hmm.
It looks like the release date is today, so you can just go ahead and check it out. It'll be a great game for this weekend.
I don't think I can play.
Your name is not Snow.
But I can't. I have an iPad 1, I think. I don't know which iPad it is.
No yawning woman! No.
I'm very much awake. I think it's just an oxygen thing. All right. I'm super, super awake. All right, peoples out there, you've been waiting for it. Yes.
What were we waiting for?
Yes, speaking of iPad, yes, Eurogamer is reporting that Apple will reveal the next iteration of its phenomenally successful iPad tablet in the first week of March. Yes, sources close to Apple told All Things D that the new device will debut at an event in San Francisco early next month, most likely held in the company's favored Yerba Buena Center for the Arts. If it follows the same release model as the iPad 2, the new tablet will then be on the shelves a few weeks later. Details on exactly what to expect from the device are thin so far. The sources are stating it'll boast a similar form factor to its predecessor, but hide a much faster chip and feature a 2048 by 1536 Retina display. Predictably, Apple, of course, has declined to comment. This is giving fuel to the rumors from Bloomberg that the iPad will be launched in stores sometime in March, which they denied originally, remember? That story stated that it will support 4G wireless, have standard LTE, and have more pixels on its screen than some high-def televisions, enough to make images look like printed material.
Make it look like printed material?
I don't know if that's a step up or not. I thought the goal was to make it look realistic.
Yeah.
All right. Wow.
I don't know what to think about that.
I don't either. I'm backing away with my hands in the air. How about that?
All right. Well, this one's kind of cute. Canine superstar Yugi Uggy lands Epic role as Nintendo's first ever spokes dog. Four-legged star of the artist delays retirement to fetch awareness. Oh, wait, hold on, what? Yeah, all right, that's exactly what I said. The artist delays retirement to fetch awareness for Nintendogs and cats game during Responsible Pet Ownership Month. In a move that's got tails wagging from Hollywood to Manhattan, Nintendo of America is taking up Snuggie, the talented Jack Russell Terrier known as... Don't scroll. Known to moviegoers as the canine co-star of The Artist. Starting today, Starting today, Uggy will sink his teeth into a memorable new role as Nintendo's first ever spokes dog, spreading the word about the interactive fun of Nintendogs plus cats for the Nintendo 3DS handheld system. To help celebrate February as Responsible Pet Owners Month, which I did not realize that was, Uggy will lend a paw by showing how the game includes valuable tips on how people can maintain happy, healthy relationships with their furry friends in real life. Through the previously announced plans to retire after this year's awards season, the chance to team up with Nintendo was too doggone good for Uggy to resist. Y'all are going to have to forgive me. This is not exactly written very well. All right, so Uggy is no stranger to Spock, and appeared in numerous television commercials and films during the last decade. As Nintendog's spokes dog, he will appear alongside his owner Omar Von Mueller to promote Nintendogs plus cats and the Pearl Pink Nintendo 3DS system, which offers a wide range of wireless features and entertainment experiences that can be enjoyed in 3D without the need for special glasses. All right, so this goes on, and you can read more about this over at GameMatrix.com this morning. I've even got a picture of Uggy. He's very cute. So cute. I just want to pet him and scratch behind his ears and rub his belly.
Well, he'll be loved deeply if he's made by the makers of Nintendogs. They will love him. Love him to death.
Yeah, he is adorable. He's very cute.
Oh, man. I got three. I don't know which one of these to do first. Jesus. Okay, let me open one. Okay. Oh, okay. I'm going to do these two. If you don't mind, they're
okay,
short.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. So, you know, the whole mega upload scandal.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Government officials have, of course, Megaload Upload founder and accused money launderer Kim.com right where they want him. He's locked up in New Zealand awaiting an extradition hearing. But that's not stopping them from kicking the internet mogul while he's down. New Zealand authorities seized .com's $4.3 million in Coatesville home today, according to the New Zealand Herald. Wait a minute.
Seized his
needed
home?
Needed to sneeze and cough. And all that stuff. The property, not previously seized in a January raid that took $16 million in assets, is currently occupied by the alleged crime ring's leader's pregnant, with twins, no less, wife, and three children. I didn't know he was married.
They just seized the home of a
.com faces up to 20 years in prison for the supposed criminal activities of his file-sharing service Mega Upload. Charges include conspiracy to commit racketeering, copyright infringement, and money laundering. The Malaline kingpin continues to insist on his innocence and was recently denied bail in a New Zealand court and deemed a flight risk. The home seized Wednesday is not the extravagant 30 million residence .com was leasing at the time of his arrest, but the silver lining is, if there is one in this case, is that .com's family will not be evicted from the seized residence. Says we'll set up a property inspections to make sure there's no damage. But other than that, the family can still enjoy it, the official assignee Guy Sayers told the New Zealand Herald. And that's via CNET. They are much nicer than we are here in the U.S. You know they would have kicked that woman out.
Yeah, they would have, and I'm glad they didn't. I mean,
yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah, that would have been just traumatic.
Are there not any kind of, well, I'm assuming his wife.
Well, they're not making them leave, so that's good. And it doesn't sound like they're planning to make them leave, so...
Yes. Well, you've got what's the story that's going on right now? There's the douchebag who was a drunk driver, killed another driver, T-boned another car, killed that driver, and then ran off, left that driver to die. And he's actually married his 49-year-old girlfriend, or not married, adopted his 49-year-old girlfriend as his daughter so he can protect his assets. He put everything in her name because she's old enough to collect on it.
Yeah.
So that the family of the driver cannot sue and get his.
This is why our country is backwards.
Oh, very, very backwards. Very backwards. This is crazy.
We unfortunately are not the only one. Unfortunately, we lost a family member right after Christmas. The thing that got hit my cousin's husband and another guy on the street, killing them both, and he can't be touched. But that happened in Australia. But somebody who is created a file sharing service. And, you know, it's copyright infringement, but like I said, technically he didn't upload anything that was on there, at least as far as we know.
Mm-hmm.
Allegedly, he gets 20 years in prison, but these people who kill somebody, they actually take their lives. They got to go to jail. It's just, we got to go after them. Full-blown, yeah, backwards.
Wow.
That's the world, people, that we live in. All right.
Sad world. Oh, you have another one.
I got one more.
Okay, what you got?
All right. VentureBeat is also reporting that this is the privacy snafu that will not die. A day after a developer discovered that the mobile social network Path was storing users' entire address books on its servers, the startup seemed to have defused the incident by apologizing and taking off the first day. But now Gawker's Ryan Tate has published an email he got from past CEO David Moran back in 2010 in which the CEO acknowledges that his company looks through your contacts in order to suggest connections, but made it explicitly clear that Path does not retain or store any of your information in any way. That's the opposite of what he said today in his apology when he noted that Path's users' contracts, including phone numbers, names, emails, and addresses, were all stored securely on our servers using industry-standard firewall technology. TechCrunch is reporting that Path 1.0 didn't have the Add Friends feature and that Moran wasn't lying since Path didn't store user data then. This is a little confusing since the email was prompted by a Dave Weiner post where he called out Path's uncannily accurate suggestions for friends to follow. But it is clear from his email that Moran was being disingenuous in his apology today when he wrote that through the feedback we received from all of you, we now understand that the way we designed our address feature was wrong. We are deeply sorry if you were uncomfortable with how our application used your phone contacts. Moran knew when he rotated back in 2010, the users were not comfortable with the idea of Path storing their contacts, so he went out of his way to make clear that it didn't. When Path made that change, it never alerted users, an oversight for which the company is now being forced to answer. We all know how companies are. This brings me around to my final point. Please make sure you pop over to the ECA.org and fill out those forms about the EULA updates because this is the same thing here. They are letting you know, but they're not letting you know. Sure, it pops up on the screen and says accept this, but you're trying to get on your PlayStation because the people are waiting for you to play Modern Warfare. So you're not looking at the EULA. You don't have time to read 16 pages of legal documents, and honestly, you shouldn't have to, and they shouldn't be taking away your right to sue. What if my PlayStation blew up as a result of downloading games?
Exactly.
And you're telling me I can't sue?
Mm-hmm.
People. Unlikely. It might.
It might. You never know. Stranger things have happened.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Bad.
Exactly. All right. This one is going to tick me off this morning. Do I have time for this one? I might have time for this one. Wait, what? We got 5 minutes before we go on to the other side, right?
Oh, wow. Thank you for reminding me. I wasn't even looking. Oh, we got a lot of people that are listening to us. Hello, people that are listening.
Hello, people.
Well, they're all on our line. Unfortunately, we don't take calls during the morning show, but tonight, if you want to call in, you're welcome to. But feel free to listen.
Mm-hmm. Do I have time for another one?
Yeah, you got 5 minutes.
All right. I'm pulling this one from GamePolitics.com this morning. RIAA cries foul in New York Times editorial. All right. All right, so they say, if you are a fan of propaganda and that classic art form of stretching the truth, then you might want to check out the article over at New York Times by RIAA CEO Gary Sherman. In it, he claims that technology companies like Google and Wikipedia were the only driving force behind the letter-writing campaigns to lawmakers and website blackouts that happened in protest of SOPA last month. He also contends that misinformation was spread about SOPA and PIPA, causing unwarranted fear about bills that we can safely say he thought were harmless.
Huh.
Yeah.
Wow.
There are a lot of astonishing claims in this lengthy editorial, but the worst lie of all is that citizens were bamboozled by Wikipedia into believing lies. Others like TechDirt have done a pretty thorough job of debunking Sherman's claims, so they say we won't go there. It is quite disheartening to see that the RIAA hasn't learned anything from the protests that took place last month. They simply assume that what happened wasn't a reaction to what they were trying to do to the Internet, but rather a clever play on the part of Google, Facebook, and Wikipedia. Sure, those players finally forced the mainstream media to report on what was going on, because, you know, did anybody else realize, or, you know, even notice the big blackout that was going on? Because nobody was reporting this. Nobody wanted to talk about it. All right. But the truth is, it was organizations like the EFF, ECA, Public Knowledge, websites like Reddit, Destructoid, Gamma Sutra, and Wired that really, and us, yes, we were here every day, thank you people. And, oh well, except for the day we blacked out. Anyway, that really pointed everyday internet users to places where they could have their voices heard, and everyday citizens that were upset with how our government was working against us. Yes, 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 we need to keep our noses out of every other country's politics and laws. Stop it. It's not cool. Sherman would love to discount the millions of people that emailed and phoned lawmakers voicing their opposition as being confused or tricked. I was not confused, nor was I tricked. You people suck. The internet has cronyism, influence peddling, and backroom dealings that we have let go on forever in Washington have finally been called out in real time by the American public. Sure, it's scary to those interests who collude with lawmakers to get their way, but corporations and interest groups don't really understand that politicians have only so much courage and rightly fear those who can bring their careers to an end. We don't do these things because they are fun or because we crave power. We do these things because we believe in free speech and the free flow of information. The writer goes on to say, this is just my opinion, of course. In a free society, we're allowed to have them. Exactly. We are, at the moment, still allowed to have them, except that, of course, you know, we've got ACTA that's going on behind closed doors. Nobody wants to talk about. It's all done in hush-hush secrets. We wouldn't even know about it had there not been leaked documents. And then we've got SOPA and PIPA, which are just atrocities. Should not happen.
Ugh.
Yes. Get out and vote. Get these people out of office. There is some seriously corrupt crap going on.
Yeah, but who do we get in office is the bad part. I don't think this generation is old enough to take control, and they're too old.
I'm voting for Corey Roberts.
No, Corey Roberts does not want to be in power. Everybody, I just walk in. Okay, all of you are fired. Just all of you. Just pack up and go.
That's fine. That's fine. You hire the rest of us.
None of us are old enough. You know, you don't remember your government class.
That,
you have to be a certain age.
True. I'm only 30.
We're not old enough to take power yet, but it's coming. You all be afraid.
It is coming. It is coming. That's a big deal. I think that's what a lot of these corporations are trying to do. That's why they're pushing so hard right now, is they realize that this next generation that's coming up, the ones that are going to be in power, aren't going to go for this crap. We are the ones raised with the internet. We're the ones raised cherishing our free speech of the internet.
The one that you said we had, yeah.
Yes, yes. And you are. You are fooling the generation that's in power right now, the ones that are scared of technology, scared of the internet, see it as evil and horrible and the bane of everything. But you know what? It's not. And we're going to have our time. We're going to have our voice. And when we do, y'all are going to seriously regret getting on our bad side.
Taking away your Medicare, anyway.
We are Sex Bomb, and we're here to make you think about death and get sad and stuff.
All right. Sorry, Jay. No, but you're playing a song. Oh.
You want to be able to call in the morning, all you got to do is let us know if you want us to increase to an hour, then we have more time to chat with you. Let's take the call. Be aware, nighttime is pretty raw.
Yeah, I can't wait. I can actually talk without, you know, being afraid of what I'm going to say.
Yeah, and we will not tolerate any how big the news questions will be. Ask you to be borrowed your bra. But anyway.
Let's just put it this way. My boobs are bigger than your
Anyway, we'll see you guys. on the other side. How nice.
On the other side. So nice. That is so nice.
Ah, the tweets. I love tweeting.
Nom, 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 tweets.
All right. So there's some voting going on if you guys want to take part in it. Voting has opened for the BAFTA Game Audience Award in case you, again, wanted to vote. Some of you like to say which games you really, really love. BAFTA has revealed their short list for their Game Audience Award, which features titles like indie darling Minecraft, of course, and epic RPG Skyrim. Games Industry is reporting that the game industry is hugely creative, and the Game BAFTA Video Games Awards aim to recognize the talented and exciting figures in games that have set the industry alight over the past year. This is from Game Marketing Director Anna Marie Mason. The BAFTA Game Awards is an award we are particularly proud of, as it gives our customers a chance to make their opinion heard. This year's shortlist is really exciting, and we'd like to encourage every game customer to vote for their favorite game, and we can't wait to see the final result. The shortlist was compiled by a number of industry experts, including Eurogamer's Johnny Minkley, shortlist Jonathan Pyle, and Future Publishing's Tim Clark. So here's the shortlist: Batman Arkham City, Battlefield 3, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, even though there's a whole bunch of them on the shelves, FIFA 12, L.A. Noire, Legend of Zelda, Skyward Sword, Minecraft, Portal 2, Skyrim, Uncharted 3, Drake's Deception. All games that came out last, they're not all the games that came out last year, but that's pretty much it. It's not just a short list, it's the only list. Anybody know of any other game that was good last year? Yeah. The ceremony itself is going to take place March the 16th, and again, voting is open on the site. You can go to BAFTAGameAward.com if you want to.
Yay! Vote.
Yeah, I'm going to need for y'all to fix that link.
All right, we all know I love me some steampunk. Yes. All right, Sparkplug Games announces new game via Kickstarter. They say, hey, listen, we the people of Sparkplug Games, a super fun indie game developer in North Carolina, have recently announced our first crowdfunded project. We'd love to tell you about our brand new endeavor, Steampunk Bullet Train. The premise of the game is simple: get in touch with your inner anti-monopolistic maverick to save the day. People, seriously, do y'all understand that I trip on words? All right, take to the rails as a would-be smuggler and transporter attempting to circumvent the overpriced iron grip of the air shipping guard. Fight your way through the territory on the old rail systems, taking down their supply shuttles and sending off squadrons. Reach the end of the line and deliver the goods. Steampunk Bullet Train is a labor of love. It's already staffed by the Sparkplug Games team, and with successful funding, we will be able to move the additional required team members on the development effort to ensure a managed and high-quality game. All right, they're looking for people to fund them. I was looking for more information about their game. You're looking for money. I need information about your game. All right, so anyways, I've got this up on GameNatrix.com if you want to check it out. Personally, I'm upset they didn't give me more information.
That reminds me. I'm so sorry. My boys over at indestructiblecannon.com are also on Kickstarter, one of those businesses there, Kickstarter. Look, just go to indestructiblecannon.com, and they're looking for some funding. Help them out. They had a really good iPhone game coming out. I mean good. I don't mean, you know, like Mafia Wars good. I mean really good. Go check them out. All right. Well, even though all this business goes on, people are arguing about the free-to-play and the... Well, there's another argument that's being brought to the table from GI.biz saying that while the console publishing market continues to shrink, the model is set for a resurgence due to growth in the mobile game sector. This is according to EEDAR's Jesse Devnich. He also spoke at the DICE Summit in Las Vegas today. The analyst predicted a rise in mobile publishing that will closely resemble the traditional console market of success, partnerships, and eventual consolidation of studios and IP. He says, we're going to see publishers through emerging markets. We're beginning to see publishers rise in mobile. He said new publishers will fall and then rise again. Ultimately, what's going to happen is that a developer does something great and it makes a lot of money, and they say to themselves, we do such a great job making our games, we're going to help other people make games. And then eventually they say, if we did such a great job helping other people make games, we could make more money if we just bought them, and then we own everything. That's pretty much how it's done. That's where we get Devent and Activision. If I'm going to start again with mobile. Devent argues that the publishing model isn't necessarily broken, but the traditional players are. He's right about that, with product decisions being made by execs on a financial level rather than creative basis, and that's why so many names, Acclaim, Atari, Midway, have all collapsed over the past two console generations. And that's true. Midway made the Lord of the Rings games, so they should have set.
Mm-hmm.
He said the publishing model is not broken, but maybe the publishers are. We've evolved to the point that they do such a great job publishing that they buy studios outright. The higher-ups make decisions, and the game becomes clunkers because the developer doesn't have the incentive beyond milestones and review scores. They don't have that sense of ownership or autonomy anymore. He predicted that independent mobile studios will team with publishing partners and through hard work become the mobile equivalent of some of the console business's most influential developers. He says it's just a necessary evil for people to become the next Insomniac or Bungie to work with publishers. If you think the publishing model is broken or is going away, well, that's really going to happen in the long term if these studios who are at the top echelons on our industry don't go through the hard times to build up the name, to build the quality, and get the resources they need to exploit and bring their full potential to the market. He is dead on. Definitely dead on. I think this is something we've been griping about for quite a while, and we probably will continue to gripe about this later tonight and on into the future and probably tomorrow, is that the mobile games market right now sucks. It's just plain and simple sucks. There's no way around it. And the only way it gets better, I think, is if some of these developers, some of you are beautifully creative, and if you would actually just let down your guard and actually go over, pick up a nice Apple or Android dev kit and bring that creativity there, it would be a whole lot better. But first, we need to get these two peoples on board, Google, Apple, on board with the ESR before you end that.
Oh, my God, yes.
You guys need to get them over there, get some people hired from the ESRB, get a team over, because this duplicate business, this sex games in the children's area business is not going to fly.
No, it's not cool, and I can't believe that they're getting away with it.
They're getting away with it because nobody's decided to sue them yet.
Yet is the word there. All right. I almost hate to read this. I almost do. Oh, but I have to.
Uh-oh.
Is Angry Birds keeping your brain healthy? Oh, yeah. All right. Yahoo Tech section. Go ahead and play your favorite addictive smartphone gaming apps. Chances are they're good for your brain. A new study from the Archives of Neurology says playing brain-stimulating games can improve your memory and delay or prevent the onset of Alzheimer's disease. Traditional brain games are scientifically designed to boost cognitive activity and enhance memory. The market for mobile brain gaming apps is booming. Lumosity is one of the top creators of brain training exercises and applications for web and mobile. They raised $32.5 million for its brain training apps in 2011. But scientists are finding that many games requiring focus, including Angry Birds, oh good God, give the brain a healthy workout. Scientists say playing games, reading and writing all slow the growth of amyloid, the brain protein scientists think might cause the memory loss disease. The Alzheimer's Association told ABC News that the study contains some valuable new data regarding the possible relationship between modifiable lifestyle risk factors and the brain changes that are indicative of Alzheimer's disease. A 100-year-old Kathleen Connell of the UK is the perfect example of a gamer who spends a couple of hours per day playing brain games on her Nintendo DS to keep her mind young. A few of Connell's favorite Nintendo DS games include Art Academy, Brain Trainer, Scrabble, and Family Fortunes. Brain Trainer calculated Connell's mental age at 64. She is 100 years old, people. 64.
Ooh, that's still pretty good.
That is awesome. She says, the Nintendo has been a great help to me. It's absolutely amazing. If there's any secret to a long life, it's to think positive and keep your mind active. I have heard that so many times, so there's got to be something to it.
Brain age is awesome.
They go on to say that if the study and Connell's advice are true, everyone at any age should play brain games to stay sharp. Awesome. Just please, no Angry Birds. No Angry Birds! Let the game die. There's got to be a better one out there.
I know, Ginger. You're going to have to give it up.
JCPenney, $35 for flipping, talking, round ball that looks like an angry bird.
They had some at Walmart. I went to Walmart at like 6 o'clock this morning. There's some tiny little angry birds at the check counter. Look at my phone. You little so-and-sos. I can't say during the day show. Okay. Well, those of you who are Final Fantasy fans will probably not like this. In Battle Square Enix MMO, Final Fantasy XIV is shrinking, with the developer announcing a series of server merges. As details emerge on the game's official site, the number of worlds is being reduced from 18 down to 10 as of March 27th. Eurogamer is reporting that all players will be required to reassign their characters to one of the new servers. If you fail to do so by March 19th, Square Enix will automatically choose one for you. The world merge is intended to improve the player experience during the period up to the launch of Final Fantasy version 2.0. To Final Fantasy XIV version 2.0. New worlds may be added in the future, for example, after the relaunch or when player numbers increase, read the announcement. For more details on how to go about making changes, see instructions on the lodestone.finalfantasy14.com.
Mm-hmm.
Square Enix has been very difficult the Square Enix's MMO has had a very difficult 18 months. After garnering negative reviews and disgruntled player feedback, all subscription fees were waived until last month. Version 2.0, along with the long-delayed PlayStation 3 launch, are expected to go live either late this year or by early 2013.
Nice. All right.
We've got time for one more.
One more? I might be able to fit this one in. I think this one's kind of neat. GamePolitics.com, iRobot's Warrior is controlled by an Xbox 360 controller. I love me some iRobot. I'll talk about that later. iRobot makes Roomba, which I have, the little circular robot that vacuums your house on its own. I love mine, by the way. I named it Bender. But you probably didn't know that the same company makes robots for the military and has done so for quite some time. In fact, iRobot created the PackBot, a robot that the military uses to dispose of bombs. According to Techland, the latest robot created for the military is called Warrior, and is controlled by an Xbox controller. Instead, it's more of a workhorse designed to handle tasks like opening doors, lifting debris and heavy containers, and using its 2-meter arm to smash things when necessary. Yay, I am robot. See me smash! It's also capable of lifting up to 220 pounds.
Ooh.
Yes, that's nice. That's nice. The Warrior is the biggest robot created by the company to date. It weighs in at 450 pounds and reaches heights of up to 11 feet 5 inches when fully upright. Warrior is controlled by using an Xbox 360 controller, and the operator sees everything in the environment around the robot via its 6 onboard cameras. Naturally, there are plenty of applications for Warrior, like situations where it is either not optimal or safe to deploy a soldier. This is awesome. They've got pictures up of Warrior on GamePolitics.com if you want to head over there and check it out. I think they also have some over at Techland, and I want to say I saw them somewhere else yesterday. But yeah, this is cool. I love you, iRobot. I own stock in you.
That's very scary, Ginger. That's how the Matrix starts, and that's how Skynet takes control.
I am funding Skynet.
You are funding Skynet. Bad.
I have a Roomba, and I have an iScuba. A scuba.
There will be no robots in this house.
So my house can get vacuumed on its own, and it can also get mopped. I love it.
I'm giving you the eye.
I love it.
You are getting the eye.
If I had gutters, I would have the one that cleans the gutters, too.
You robot lover.
I am a robot lover, man. Yeah, baby. You. It's just stamina there. Anyways,
You know what I've done with you. Oh, God.
You know you love me.
And with that note, we're going to go. We will see you guys this night. That conversation is best left for later. Oh, I made the call.
Thank you. Ginger.
Later, boys and girls. Mwah!